Hey, good afternoon, Juneau. It's exactly 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. I have a great lineup of guests. In the studio with me right now are three folks who are celebrating the 73rd anniversary of the Civil Air Patrol. We'll be talking to them right after National Native News. The public market is this weekend. It started at noon today. Pete Metcalf will be dropping by to tell us a bit about the organization, the public market. But most exciting, Christy Canbor is over at the public market, and at 3:45 we'll bring her in live by telephone to fill us in on all of the crazy stuff that's going on over there. Booths all over, three or four locations. It's a wild time to do some shopping and get some uniquely Alaskan things for your Christmas gifts. And the two high school swim teams from JDHS and TMHS will be coming here because they're having their annual Christmas tree sale starting right away. So right now it's time for National Native News. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A herd of genetically pure bison has finished its journey from Yellowstone National Park to the Assiniboine and Sioux tribes, Montana Public Radio's Christopher Allen reports.
Nearly 2,000 pounds of wild bison lumbers out of a truck and down a ramp onto a pasture owned by the Assiniboine and Sioux tribes of the Fort Peck Reservation. Some members of the tribe greeted the animals with a song. Dozens of excited people were there to see the workers herd the animals into a 140-acre holding pen. Wildlife officials originally captured the herd migrating out of Yellowstone National Park. They're part of only 4,000 genetically pure bison left in the country. Tribal councilman Tommy Christian has represented the Assiniboine and Sioux tribes of Fort Peck for 15 years and was part of the treaty signing in September.
Many of us live by our way of life, our value system that kind of develop the character to get through a lot of these hard times, and the buffalo represents that. Like the buffalo, when a storm comes, it faces the wind, or faces the storm, and I guess that's kind of representative of our adaptability and our resiliency as a nation of people.
A Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Commission decided to send the animals to the tribes instead of possibly splitting the herd among groups across the country who asked to manage them. Defenders of Wildlife Executive Director Jonathan Proctor traveled from Washington, D.C. to Fort Peck to see the herd being released.
You could tell these animals were wild by their reaction to get out of those trucks and out onto that prairie. And it was a beautiful sight to see. You know, these animals would have otherwise been sent to slaughterhouses when they left Yellowstone National Park.
Defenders of Wildlife is a national nonprofit group that advocates for federal funding of wildlife conservation. Fort Peck Fish and Game Director Robbie Magnin and his staff manage the herds and test the animals for disease. He says the animals will graze across a 13,000-acre pasture later this month. They joined about 50 Yellowstone bison previously obtained by Fort Peck. For National Native News, I'm Christopher Allen in Missoula, Montana.
A Lakota teen has introduced the hat and boot dance to the Black Hills powwow in South Dakota. Jim Kent has more.
The Native American ranching and rodeo lifestyle that began in the late 19th century continues for many Native families today, says Sabrina Puyer.
My last name's Puyer, and that's from Oglala Sioux Tribe down in Pioneer. They're a big name for powwow and rodeo even. And on my mom's side, the Thompsons are another horse ranch.
17-year-old Sabrina followed the family's powwow interests and became a champion dancer. Last year, she was chosen to be Miss Hesapa at the 2013 Black Hills Powwow. Before her reign ended this year, Sabrina wanted to do something special to honor not only the ranching and rodeo heritage of her family, but the long horse and rodeo traditions of her people. To do that, she chose to host a hat and boot dance special. Instead of her usual shawl, Sabrina Puyer wore jeans, a pink cotton blouse, a cowboy hat, cowboy boots, and carried a lariat as she danced at the Black Hills Powwow.
It's part of who I am. It's where I came from within my family. And honestly, it's just a lot of fun to do.
When the drums finally stopped, Sabrina gave away two horses to the best male dancer and the best female dancer as a token of her respect. In the Lakota culture, being given a horse is the highest honor that one can receive. It's a tradition Sabrina Puyer is continuing as she dances her way to the next arena. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Program support by the Institute of American Indian Arts, offering the MFA in Creative Writing, featuring one-on-one mentorships with authors like Sherman Alexie, Natalie Diaz, and Joseph Boyd. More information available at iaia.edu/MFA.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
My internship with the Alaska Department of Revenue sparked my interest in economics and government and helped pay for my education.
That's University of Alaska Southeast BBA Management alumni Mackenzie Grace Merrill. Work in your dream field, make money, and get university credit with UAS Career Services.
My degree has prepared me for a variety of careers.
More information at uas.alaska.edu/career_services.
It's just about 6.5 minutes after 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. We're in the middle of Juneau afternoon. My first three guests here are folks from the Civil Air Patrol Southeast Squadron, which is right here in Juneau. Out at the airport, they have a rather impressive little building with a lot of interesting things going on. David Heidick is here. He is a captain and is the personnel officer of the squadron. Sabrina Kava is the cadet commander, and Thomas Greiner is the deputy commander. Welcome.
Thank you.
So this is the 73rd anniversary. Who knew? What are you doing special? You going to have a big dinner?
We have a yearly banquet for nice food, and the senior members and the cadets do some performance for Color Guard. And we do some award ceremonies.
So now a senior member is someone who's over 21, you were telling me. Mm-hmm. And the cadets are people who are high school students primarily. But you can be continue to be a cadet after you graduate.
And yes, sir. Yeah. Most of them are middle schoolers, though.
How long have you been involved?
I've been involved for only a year.
Okay. And how about you?
I've been in 5 years next July.
Oh, okay.
So Thomas started as soon as he turned 12, almost. So that's the minimum age to be involved in CAP.
So now, Thomas, as personnel officer, what's your job?
Personnel officer, I assist with that. But my primary duty is professional development, career development for senior members, and then I also work as the assistant deputy of cadets and ensure that they have opportunity and career direction, things like that. And mostly I just give them a hard time and they do the same thing in return. But we try to conquer a few things and figure a few things out. It's their program. I'm just there to kind of monitor it, and we guide them.
I should tell the radio audience here that Sabrina and Thomas are in uniform at the moment. Sabrina's wearing a set of Air Force Blues with a jacket.
This is actually a uniform.
And that is a senior. That's the senior cadet uniform. Is the
senior
polo
uniform,
shirt with
right.
a patch. Yeah, but Thomas is wearing a blue shirt, a short sleeve shirt, which is the summer uniform for the Air Force. So your uniforms are exactly the Air Force uniforms.
Yes, not quite,
different
but
insignia.
They're almost.
Yeah. Okay. So now, does that lead you, do you gain anything if you decide you're going into the regular Air Force from your CAP experience?
Yes, sir. If you rank up in Civil Air Patrol to Billy Mitchell Award or Second Lieutenant, once you join the Air Force, you can go in, once you get out of boot camp, you'll be an E3 while everybody else is an E1.
Okay. So if you went in as an enlisted man, you'd actually gain three steps in rank to an E3.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Very
okay.
similar to ROTC program.
Right.
When you do ROTC, you get the E3 as well.
Yeah. So a year ago, you joined CAP.
Yes.
So how is it that you came to be the commander of the cadet commander of the squadron after a year?
You know, it's all about motivation and dedication. We teach that a lot in the squadron, and it just takes a lot of responsibility. And I guess I just took on the role when I needed to.
And so what are your duties as cadet commander?
Oh, that's a long one.
Well, try to shorten it down to we have about 6-8 minutes here, so see what you can do in that time.
It's just helping the cadets. Mostly I'm in the office. I plan the meetings, and then I help them when they need help. It's a lot of guiding.
Now, the CAP is a military organization. In other words, you follow military policies and like that. You march, you have, you're arranged as a squadron and you're part of a wing. The wing is all of the units in Alaska, as I understand it?
Yes, sir.
And our squadron down here is a small part of that. How many people are in the Southeast Squadron?
There's 17 cadets in the squadron.
Do you have senior members as well?
Yes, sir.
And
31.
How many?
Currently 31 senior
31
members.
Senior members.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, how do the senior members work with the cadets? What other roles do you play?
Well, there's a flying side of it. The Civil Air Patrol has three missions. So one is aerospace education. The other mission is emergency services. And the last mission, and I'm going to have to go through this, is cadet
programs.
Okay, yeah, and obviously, thank you for being here to remind me of that. So I have to go back to my cheat notes here because otherwise I'll stumble over myself. So there's a lot of opportunity for the senior members, pilots, obviously. A lot of them were attracted to it because we have the airplanes. And we can provide search and rescue in support of the Coast Guard. We generally answer to Sector Juno. They will work with what they call RCC out of the Air Force, out of Anchorage. We will then get our orders, and then we will answer to Sector Juno here locally as we get up in the air and we keep our communications checks. And we're volunteers, so we're a lot less expensive than deploying a helicopter, and we got a lot more eyes in the sky. So we just take one Coast Guard asset that's out there doing search and rescue, and you add 8 or 10 Civil Air Patrol aircraft from Southeast or from up north that come down and help us, and we can certainly help on a mission and cover a lot more area.
Now, have either of you actually engaged in one of those SAR missions?
Official meeting, no. We're just training right now.
Okay.
Sir.
Yeah. So do you think you'll have that opportunity? Eventually, do you get enough training that you're selected to go on those missions?
Personally, for me, I'm almost going to college, so I don't think I have that much time left. But I know we're starting to get the younger cadets ready, and most of them are almost done with their packing lists and stuff.
What other kinds of activities does the squadron engage in?
We usually do a lot of volunteer. We go out.
Community service.
Yeah, community
different
service.
Types. But they do get involved in, say, for example, a couple years ago, they had the emergency exercise at the airport. So we supported that, having our people there. I think even you as a ham radio operator were there too, Pat. And we also kind of supported that mock 737 crash that came in here, and a lot of people from the community supported that. So that was one of the first things you were involved in there, Sabrina Kavas. She got to go to the hospital and all
the
mass
were
casualty. Casualty exercise, and which went off real well. We used the cadet, the CAP hangar as a staging area for everything. We fed people. We brought the injured in there. We cared for them and basically just took care of things. And it was great to have the turnout from the airport and all the emergency services people in the area and to get to know who those partners are.
Now, you said you'll have a banquet, but I'm wondering, this is the 73rd anniversary of Civil Air Patrol. This is a national organization. Are there events happening nationally that will celebrate this anniversary?
There's so much going on, it's hard to keep track of it. Next week, there's what they call Wreaths Across the Border, which is basically Wreaths Across America, but we also do have a activity going on with the Canadians with a heart ceremony that's honoring Americans remembering together. And the cadets are scheduled to fly to Haines next weekend. We're going to go to the border and meet up with the Canadian Air Cadets, and then American Legion VFW are assisting us with these things. And it's a great time, and I think they get a lot out of it, and they see the logistics that are involved, the help with the planning and the support and the cadets, and even the Boy Scouts are kind of on board with this.
Canadian Air Cadets, I didn't even know they existed. Have you worked with them before?
Yes, sir, last year.
Uh-huh. Lots of people up there?
Not many. There was only, seven cadets from Canada.
And are they from Whitehorse, or are they from all over Canada?
These are from Whitehorse, Yukon Territory, yes, and we'll be meeting up with them again.
Do you know how big their organization is?
I guess that's one of the questions we need to ask them, but I think that they may be larger than we are.
Definitely larger.
At least their squadron.
Do you know if they have the same kinds of opportunities that we have?
Absolutely, it's very similar.
Parallel organization. Yeah. So I guess one of the things that we should establish here, there's 17 members in the squadron, but I'm sure you'd be interested in some more. Is that Is that a fair assumption?
Oh, yes, sir.
We would love more.
So let's assume that there's somebody listening to the broadcast who's thinking, you know, then that'd be interesting to me. How would someone go about becoming a CAP cadet?
Well, what's my motto? The world is run by those that show up. If people start to show up, you know, they're going to start coming in. We're going to put them to work. Uh-huh. I mean, that's Sabrina Cava, the tech sergeant, soon-to-be master sergeant, came in on board, and then she's heard this almost from day one, and she showed up. So that's the big thing, is to show up, and you will basically be promoted, have responsibility in the squadron, whether you, I don't want to say whether you like it or not, she seems to like it, and she's an awesome leader. I mean, you've heard her speak, and she's very smart with her responses, and I think that Thomas would have to agree that she's been a very good leader.
Yeah.
And she's taught him a thing or two, even though he's been in the squadron for quite a bit longer.
She's real good at delegating tasks, I would imagine. So you wind up doing a lot of work, don't you?
Yes, sir. She plans things. I make it happen.
Ah, okay. Okay. So that's an excellent arrangement for leadership, I think. Yeah. So, well, wonderful. So they just come out to the CAP. When would they want to show up? Or is there someone they can call? Is there a website?
There is a website. It's GoCivilAirPatrol.com. They can search out the squadron. Generally, there's a point of contact number within GoCivilAirPatrol.com. But I've also got some flyers and some postings on the different bulletin boards. And if they just did a search, Civil Air Patrol Juno, they're going to find some contact numbers.
So if you're interested in this. Yeah.
Absolutely. And the hangar number, and they can leave messages, is 789-0245.
Okay, and it takes messages.
Then so. It takes messages, and we will get back with people.
Okay, well, great opportunity. Congratulations on your 73rd anniversary. Congratulations on your imminent graduation from high school and off to, you said maybe to UAA for a bit, up around Anchorage. And I hope you continue on with your career, and maybe some of this training for SAR will get you in the air and get you out there helping the Coast Guard with these things. Thank you very much for bringing these folks down.
Oh,
and
sure.
Appreciate your coming down and telling us a bit about the CAP.
Stayed and I damn near didn't come back again. I didn't go very fast on a steam-powered airplane. Oh, the wheel went around and up and down and inside and then back again. Sitting in 747 just watching them clouds roll by. Can't tell if it's sunshine or if it's rain. I'd rather be sitting in a deck chair high up over Kansas City on a genuine old-fashioned authentic steam-powered aeroplane. Just watching them clouds roll by. Can't tell if it's sunshine or if it's rain. Rather be sitting in that chair high up over Kansas City on a genuine old-fashioned authentic steam-powered aeroplane. Mm-hmm.
A little steam-powered airplane there to sort of celebrate the 73rd anniversary of the Civil Air Patrol, which we just heard about here on Juneau Afternoon. Pat Moore, your host today. It's 20 minutes after 3 o'clock. My next guests are here to tell us about some things that are going on over at the public market. And we're not going to give away the whole show, ladies, because we are going live to the public market at 3:45 and going to bring it in from over there and listen to all the craziness that's going down. But anyway, with me in the studio are Heavy Ridgway, Hal Terman, and Katie Buchanan, and they are part of the JDHS Art Program, and they are running a fundraiser to buy a piece of equipment called a pug mill, which I had to dig into my crossword puzzle brain and remember what a pug mill was, but they reminded me as well that it's a device that allows you to recycle clay, which is really important in the process of pottery. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And first of all, tell us what's going on over at the market, but don't give it all away.
Oh, my gosh. No. There's so much
going on
there.
We'll let Christy take us around and walk us through a little bit.
Well, there's 110 vendors at Centennial Hall and 50 at the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council. So it's very busy and bustling, very colorful, all kinds of beautiful things up on display.
And this is not to mention the fact that Tlingit Haida Central Council has the Native Artists Market running at the same time at the Elizabeth Paratrovich Hall. So right now is a real great opportunity to do some really interesting shopping downtown. Every year this is a major event. My wife was there this morning, so I have to go home and see if I have to get a second mortgage on the house. So so tell us about this art fundraiser. What are you going to do?
Well, we're selling handmade items. We've got ceramics from JDHS students, some handmade cards.
Yeah. There are also ornaments. Yeah, so we just worked really hard, and we made some very nice ceramics. We're also selling tickets to a pug mill party. And what the main thing is we're auctioning off a painting. And do you want to tell us about the painting, Ms. Ridgway?
Sure. The painting was painted by Aaron Elmore on a wall at the restaurant Zephyr downtown. And Zephyr has since been purchased by Tracy LaBarge and family and group, and they're remodeling. So
they renamed it Salt.
They did rename it Salt, and she very kindly had the mural carefully removed and donated it to the art club.
Ah.
So I had an architectural restoration class in college, and I thought I could take this on, so I glued a piece of Luon on the back, a very thin piece of plywood, and framed it out so that it can be hung on the wall. Hal here did a remarkable job patching some of the color in the transportation that got a little scratched or dinged because it is painted right on the sheetrock. But we made it something.
This is not a tiny piece.
No.
This is a significant painting.
It's 12 and a half feet long and just over 3.5 feet tall.
Okay, so if you win this thing, you're going to have to kind of rearrange your exhibit space, shall we say.
Yes. Yeah. You can win this auction item by either paying for a bid and doing a closed bid where you pay us $10 and fill out a bidding form and put it in a box. And then the box will be open at the Pug Mill Party on the 18th of January, which is a Sunday. Salt has donated the space for us to give away the painting at the event, and so we're going to sell these $10 bids, and then whoever wins it has to pay what they bid. If you want to come to the party, then you don't have to pay $10. You can bid live against the closed bidders.
Do the closed bidders get a chance to up their bid?
Only if they come to the party.
Only if they come to the party. So you have to be present to defend your bid.
Have to be present to win.
Yeah, I got it. Okay. Kind of a fascinating thing. Are there other things that will be auctioned off, or is it just the painting?
Well, one of the most exciting things about it is, as I run into people in town and tell them, boy, JDHS has been, had ceramics program for such a long time. Our equipment's getting kind of old, and talking to local people about it, I ran into Jay Crondell in the grocery store the other day. He said, yeah, I took ceramics from somebody named Max Lewis back in the 1940s. And, and so I realized, wow, it's been 75 years or more that we've been offering ceramics. And he had great stories to tell about Max. And then he said he'd come, and he said he'd donate an item that maybe we could auction off. And then I decided we'd do door prizes. So Colette Costa has agreed to be the MC. If you come to our party, you get a door prize, and the door prize comes in the form of a Yankee swap. if you get called for your door prize after me and you like my door prize, then you can take my door prize.
Okay. So it's Christmas swap out rules here.
That's right.
Evil process. Now, if you do three switches, does the thing stop dead?
We might have to make that rule.
That's the old
rule.
Yeah, that's the way that works. So if it's three swaps, then you can't take it again. Okay, so this is the JDHS Art Club, and they're buying a pug mill. Now, we settled in our conversation before we went on the air about what a pug mill is, but could you briefly describe, one of you, what a pug mill is and what it does?
Well, it recycles clay, so it's kind of necessary. The one that's at the school currently is very, very old.
So this is like it's got a hopper on it and a motor and that kind of stuff, and you drop the clay in the hopper?
Yeah,
And what is it? It recycles it. What is it?
It recycles
it. Do you have to grind it back up or something?
The clay is going to be all dry and gross and horrible, and then
okay.
It's going to make the clay usable again.
I know about gross, horrible clay. It's a major problem for us.
It's dusty, and it can cause silicosis. So it would be nice to have a new pug mill that we could put all our clay scraps into, wet and dry, and mix them together.
Do you have a pug mill now?
We have an old one from the 80s.
That makes terrible noises.
Well, you have to dry out the clay entirely and get it wet again and then dry it out again and put it in.
And the one you want to buy, you don't have to go through all that process.
Straight in there.
Throw it in and it's done.
And, you know, it was Jeremy Kane at the University of Alaska that came to me. He's the ceramics instructor at the university, and he came into the room when I took the job after trying to fill Tom Manning's shoes, very large shoes to fill. And walked in and said, what do I need to do to make this a more efficient process? And Jeremy Kane said, you need a better pug mill. Uh-huh. I think that'll take care of a lot of stuff. And he volunteered, his band, the Great Alaska Bluegrass Band, will be playing at our pug mill party.
All right. So what's the goal? How much do you have to raise?
$6,000.
$6,000. That's really not out of the question. You got auctions, you got door prizes, you got people paying their way in, you got a band, you got an event.
It'll be fun.
when is this lovely thing?
January 18th.
Jan 18. What time does it start?
6:30 to 9:30.
And this is at the current Salt Restaurant, which Zephyr. Okay,
right.
Up there on the corner of Seward and Main?
Second
and Seward, yeah. Okay, good. I assume you have to get tickets in advance?
That's right. We're selling tickets at Public Market right now.
Okay.
Or you can get them at Annie Kales.
At Annie Kales. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Other places around? Any place else?
Not the place we have so far.
Okay. Annie Kales or at the Public Market booth.
Right.
Okay.
Or from an art club representative.
And now let's go all the way back to that Public Market booth. You can get, what did we say? We said handmade, homemade items.
Oh, yeah.
As?
You can get ceramics. You can get some knit things. You can... Honestly, there's a ton of stuff there. You can find almost anything.
Cards.
And when we walked into the big double doors over there and we're in the Public Market, where are y'all?
Oh.
We're in the very back.
Okay.
We're in the Juno Arts and Humanities Council.
Oh, you're in the Jack.
Right.
Okay.
The Jack, admittance is free, and we're back in the corner. If you go to the Centennial Hall, admittance is $7 for the whole weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And there are more vendors there, of course, including Jeremy Kane, who's selling his own wares in the corner.
Okay. And we're gonna hear a real tale about that here coming up at about 3:45. So
it's so exciting and colorful.
All right,
great way to meet your neighbors.
Heather Ridgway, Hal Terman, and Katie Buchanan. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for a lot of hard work, and I hope your pug mill party goes well. I've never advertised a pug mill party before in my life.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 28th of November. 2014. It's the birthday of Nancy Mitford, 1904, London. Came from an aristocratic family, but that didn't stop her from satirizing her own class. She wrote to a friend, "If one can't be happy, one must be amused. Don't you agree?" It's the birthday of the writer and physicist Alan Lightman, Memphis, 1948. His first novel, Einstein's Dreams, made up of 30 dreams that Lightman imagined Albert Einstein might have had during the months of 1905 when he was working on his theory of special relativity. It's the birthday of the poet William Blake, London, 1757. He was little known in his own lifetime, regarded as a lunatic by most people who knew him, died in poverty at the age of 69. In 30 years, he had sold fewer than 20 copies of his Songs of Innocence and of Experience. But 3 years after he died, he was mentioned in a popular 6-volume encyclopedia of British artists. And then one of his admirers, Alexander Gilchrist, set out to write his biography. It was published in 1863. Blake had died in 1827. Life of William Blake, and it was hugely popular. And for the first time, thanks to a biography, William Blake was considered a major English poet. Here's a poem for today by Hayden Carruth, entitled An Apology for Using the Word Heart in Too Many Poems. What does it mean? Lord knows, least of all I. Faced with it, schoolboys are shy, and grown-ups speak it at moments of excess, which later seem more or less unfeasible. It is equivocal, sentimental, debatable, really a sort of lentil, neither pea nor bean. Sometimes it's a muscle, sometimes courage, or at least hustle, sometimes a core or center, but mostly it's a sound that slushily fits the meters of popular songwriters without meaning anything. It is stout, leonine, chicken, great, hot, warm, cold, broken, whole, tender, bold, stony, soft, green, blue, red, white, faint, true, heavy, light, open, down, shallow, etc. No wonder our superiors thunder against it, and yet, in spite of a million abuses, the word survives. Its uses are such that it remains virtually indispensable and, I think, defensible. The Freudian terminology is awkward or worse and suggests so many perverse ideologies that it is useless, but heart covers the whole business. Lovers to monks, that is, the capacity to love in the fullest sense. Not even the dullest reader misapprehends it, although locating it is a matter awaiting someone more ingenious than I. But given this definition, driven though it is out of a poet's necessity, isn't the word needed at present as much as ever if it is well written and said with the heart and the head? A poem by Hayden Carruth, An Apology for Using the Word Heart in Too Many Poems, from his collected shorter poems published by Copper Canyon Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
KTOO programming is made possible in part by Juneau's own Alaska Pure Mountain Spring Water, available in Juneau stores or delivered in 5-gallon jugs to homes and offices. 780-4262.
It's just 3:35. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My next two guests are here to tell us a whole bunch of different things, but among them, this is the beginning tonight, today, of the big Christmas tree sale. Goes on every year and is a major fundraiser for, was always for JDHS's swim team, but now they've been joined by the TMHS swim team as of last year and are now sharing the profits, and they're making raising good money for these programs. So with me are Michelle Kalki and Dakota Isaac, and Dakota is one of the ladies that you saw on the front page of the paper with a big smile on her face when the lady swim team won state here just recently. And we may, in the process here, get joined by one of the TMHS members. because he might be dropping in on the conversation here. So welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So when can we go buy Christmas trees? Are you open right now?
We are open. We got the tree stand set up this morning with a bunch of volunteers, and every time they drive by, the lights are on. Weekdays are from 5 to 7, and then on the weekends, we're open from 10 to 5.
Okay, so weekdays, it's mm-hmm. 5 to 7 p.m., mm-hmm. and then weekends, it's 10 till 5?
Correct.
Okay, and the trees that you get now, these are all live trees?
Yes.
Right, okay, and they vary in height from what to what?
Let's see here. We have 4-foot trees, ranging all the way up to 10-foot trees.
Okay, so practically anyone can find the tree of their dreams at this whole thing. And you get your trees from?
They're from a farm in Washington, okay. And it's the same place that Fred Meyer's actually. We are able to buy at cost from the Fred Meyer's place where they're buying their trees, and then Alaska Marine Lines ships up the trees for us for free.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that really helps with the fundraising process. So what's the money go for?
All our travel, I think, because we go on meets almost every other weekend during season, so that adds up when you have 20-plus swimmers. So I think it mostly goes to that, and team gear, jackets, suits, shorts, whatever we get that year, so swim caps, T-shirts.
Dakota, how long have you been swimming with the team?
Well, the high school team, 4 years, mm-hmm. and then I've swam club for almost 12.
Mm. Yeah. And what's your big power stroke?
Breaststroke.
Mm. Okay, yeah, cool. And are you involved with the swim team?
I am. I'm involved with the swim club, and then also I'm on the booster club for the JDHS swim team.
Oh, okay. And how big is that booster club?
Well, there's probably like 5 of us that work together on it.
So is that the 80-20 rule? Are there? And we just got joined. It looks like Thane O'Brien, I think, just walked in. Did I get the name right?
Yep, I'm here.
Yeah, TMHS, congratulations. I think you guys took 5th in the...
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, and we established that we have a breaststroker over here. What's your stroke?
I'm also a breaststroker, too, but I'm also a 50 freestyler, so kind of a freestyler sprinter.
Okay. I haven't followed closely enough to know what the standing is between TMHS and JDHS. How are you compete with each other when you're not off to state, right?
Yeah, well, when they built 2 high schools, it kind of split us up. So our team, we have a lot of girls, and they have a lot of boys. We have, like, a couple boys, and they only have a few girls. So it's kind of like, so we don't really, I mean, we do compete, but it's different because they have boys, we have a lot of girls.
Yeah.
So.
Now, who are your other competitors?
Around the state?
Yeah.
Our big one was, let's see, Diamond and Kodiak tied for 2nd place, 13 points behind us, so... And last year, we only beat Diamond by 3 points. So I would say Diamond for girls.
Diamond is a high school in Anchorage.
Yeah, there's a lot of schools there, but right. Diamond High School is one of them.
Okay, and then how about for the guys?
Well, for the guys for TMHS, this year we really had to compete against Petersburg because they had a lot of other boys that were going head-to-head with a lot of us in our races. So it's really exciting.
Yeah. Okay, so and you've been swimming how long?
I've been swimming probably like 10 years or so.
10 years,
I would
14.
Say. Yeah, probably since I was 7 or 8.
Yeah. So you're a senior?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you are?
I'm also a senior.
Senior, okay. So this is, what are you going to do next? What's the plan?
I'm planning on swimming for Boise State next year.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
All right.
So going there. Off so that will be cool. Yeah.
It's kind of a nice place.
Yeah.
It's
I like it.
And how about you?
Well, there's a lot of different options I'm considering. If there's a school that is willing to maybe give me some scholarship money, or if there's a spot open on any school that I'm looking at, I'd definitely consider swimming there. So. Because it'd be really fun to swim in college.
If the criterion is width across the shoulders, I think you've got it sacked. Okay, so I'm going to come back to the JDHS club, the group of adults. So now you said there's 5 of you.
Well, there's on a JDHS booster club, but then Thunder Mountain also has a booster club too.
They do
so
too.
We work together.
Okay, how many people they have?
Oh, there's probably 20 adults that are working on, and there's like Dakota said, every family has to spend time at the booth selling trees. So
okay.
We all.
So there's a lot of people involved
yeah.
in this process.
Yep.
Okay. And if someone is thinking of buying a Christmas tree, let's get those hours out there again. So it's I didn't write it down. Let's
okay.
do it again. Okay.
So on weekends.
Yeah, weekends.
10 to 5.
And that would be tomorrow.
Saturday and
yeah,
Sunday.
Saturday and Sunday. Mm-hmm. Okay, 10 to 5 tomorrow.
And
okay.
then Monday through Friday, uh-huh. 5 to 7.
You've all had experience with this before. So I guess one of the things I'm wondering is advice for people. You shouldn't dally on this, right? You do get fresh trees in as the season goes on? No.
No, this so is it. We have one container of trees.
Okay. Yeah. So if you want the...
There's two. I guess there's two.
Yeah,
we don't get
but
it.
It's
we don't
there
get
now.
Yeah.
So all uh-huh. of the trees that you're going to have are currently
are
on site. So mm-hmm. if somebody wants their pick of trees, they need to do this early.
Yeah.
We have a lot, but...
Okay.
And there's a variety, too. There's three different kinds. We have noble firs, grand firs, and Nordman firs.
Can you characterize what those are? No, I didn't want to put you on
it's
the spot.
You know, I don't know that I can't distinguish between the three, but there are, in terms of the density of the trees and then the height, we have a couple that are like the Norman only come in certain sizes. So,
okay.
And they're a little different color of the trees also in terms of the needles.
Okay, and it's possible if you put the tree, you have to put it in water, and I think there's stuff that you can actually buy that you can add to the water
mm-hmm.
yeah. to keep the tree nice and fresh, even if you buy it now.
I mean, yeah, I think Fred's has, yeah. ironically, yeah, Fred's next door to where we're selling the trees, I think they have tree stands and some of the...
That'd be Fred Meyer.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. So.
Okay, so you might want to buy that. If you were going to buy this early, you might want to buy that special piece of equipment. But it's totally practical to keep a tree from now until after Christmas and not have it fall apart and needles all over your floor. And
right. Definitely.
Yeah.
I think if you Google, too, I think it's like maybe just sugar water, too. But
well, I believe that's all it is.
Yeah.
But you know, it's Better Living Through Chemistry. Maybe somebody's put together a fascinating additive that works even better than sugar, which is what I've always heard that you put in the tree. Okay, so this is the JDHS and TMHS combined swim teams. They are selling Christmas trees out by Fred Meyer. It's just when you go there to swing by the gas station, they're right over there against the fence. And you'll be going until?
Until they're all sold.
Until they're all sold. So, and now is the time to get the best selection because they just opened up. The booth was finished today, and they're open tonight from 5 till 7, and they'll be open tomorrow from 10 to 5, Sunday 10 to 5, and then on weekdays 5 to 7 until all the trees are gone. Okay. When yeah. when you work in the booth?
December 20th, I think.
How about you?
I think I've got three different shifts starting next week. Not all in the same week, but they're all Sundays, I believe. So you'll
okay.
see me there.
And the Booster Club is just going to be hanging out all the time, right?
We always have an adult with
okay.
the swimmers.
All right.
Yeah.
Good enough. Okay. Oh, prices on the trees.
Anywhere. They're priced anywhere from $35 all the way up to $125.
Okay.
And one more item we have, too, is we have wreaths this year, too.
Oh, you're selling wreaths
yeah.
as well?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Wreaths are real popular.
Yeah, okay.
And they go really fast. They're $40.
Okay, and they're made, they were shipped up to you all. Mm-hmm. You're not manufacturing mm-hmm. wreaths over there. Okay, good. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, hey, it's a wonderful thing. I see it every year, and I'm glad you're putting it on again. Let's have a little appropriate, maybe not appropriate, but a little Christmas music.
This is Bird Note. On a brisk November day, a mysterious whale carries across the lead-gray surface of a northern bay. The notes are drawn out, eerily musical, and can be heard from far away. You're hearing the call of a male black scoter. Black scoters are sea ducks that spend the winter on saltwater bays. The unmistakable drake is feathered jet black, set off by a bright yellow knob atop its bill, a beacon on the dark water. The duck swimming alongside him, dark brown with a vivid brown and white face, is a female. Black scoters are large, strong ducks, a foot and a half long, and buoyant swimmers with a habit of cocking their tails upward. Black scoters return south from nesting on freshwater tundra ponds. Each fall, they can be found on bays all across the northern hemisphere. Through the colder months, these handsome, hardy ducks dive in search of mollusks, sea worms, and other prey. Watch for them along the shoreline where sea ducks gather, scattered among groups of goldeneyes and other scoters. An unmistakable clue to their presence? That mysterious, musical whale. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
It's about 12 minutes before 4 o'clock, and we are about to do something we have not done before. We are going live, even as we speak here, to the public market, which is going on today right over in the Centennial Hall. And Andrea Campbell, are you with me?
I am here.
All right. And where precisely are you?
You know, we're kind of at the end. You come in and you walk your way through. We're next to the doors that lead out to Ian. And we are next to D&J Design, and we are next to Bits and Pieces and Outside In.
Now, Andrea, your booth is called what?
We're just here with the KTOO booth.
Okay, and is KTOO selling anything at their booth, or are they just greeting and smiling and being wonderful?
You know, we're doing all of that. We're greeting, smiling, and we're selling tote bags.
Outstanding.
For $15 a piece. Mm-hmm. We also have some auction items up, ready to take a look at for our online auction we have going on right now.
Yeah, people can bid even as we speak, and then follow their bid up when we get to the live part, I think sometime this next week, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Andrea, now, can you briefly kind of look around and tell me about how many booths you see that are right around you there?
Oh, gosh. I'm stepping out a little bit, and I'm kind of in the main area, and there's got to be at least 20, 25 that I'm seeing right now. The ballroom is packed. As you can tell, I don't know if you're picking up all the noise. It's pretty loud in here, too.
Yeah, we're hearing something which on the radio sounds a little bit like birds chirping in the background. It's obviously people speaking, but your mic pickup is not doing that. So you are surrounded by people who are selling various things. Can you describe some of the things that you can see there that people could take advantage of at the market?
Yeah, I see some stoneware next to us on the left. We have a young lady across from us who's selling Alaskan prints on various items. I see some jewelry by Bits and Pieces. Looking into the ballroom, I see furs and candy and jewelry. There's all kinds of things here.
Now, we should mention that this is only one of three venues that are going on for this weekend. The main event is, of course, scattered all over Centennial Hall in the big ballroom and out in the entryway, and probably in the other rooms off to the side, the smaller meeting rooms, as it usually is. And then there's a second chapter of this whole thing in the Jack with free admission. It's $7, I think, to come into the main Centennial Hall area. And then at the same time, with all of these things, not directly related to it, is the Tlingit Haida Central Council Native Artist Market, which opened today at noon and runs through Sunday, November 30th. And that's just across the street kind of and down the block at the Elizabeth Perapovich Hall. It's at 320 West Willoughby Avenue. So there are just a huge number of opportunities to find the perfect Christmas present this weekend, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. Now, 'tis the season. It's time. I feel like public market definitely kind of starts off that holiday season for us here.
Isn't it a wonderful opportunity for people to kind of come together and wander through the market, to see their friends and neighbors and have the advantage of being able to see all of the folks that have worked on crafts through the year and all of these other things that they've assembled to offer at the market? It's really an amazing, amazing opportunity.
Exactly.
So how long are you personally going to be selling or working at the K2 booth today?
I am only here until 5 o'clock.
Okay, and then another, let's see, it closes at 5, right, tonight?
No, I believe tonight we close at 7. Okay. So Christy Schomburg will be here at 5 to relieve me, and she'll be taking over the post.
And then there'll be someone from KTOO working the booth throughout the entire weekend.
Yes, there will.
Okay, and that's probably true of a lot of the booths, that there'll be different folks who will be coming in and coming and going and taking care of the booths. The other real great opportunity here is that in many cases, if you don't find exactly what you want, a lot of the artists and craftsmen don't bring all of their stock down to the public market. So if you don't see exactly what you like, I'd really advise you to talk to the artist and see if there may be an opportunity to see something that maybe is not on display at the moment.
Definitely, definitely. It's a nice way to kind of get a taste of each venue and what they have to offer and develop a bit of a relationship with them from there on out.
You bet. And then you can also look around from the standpoint of seeing all of the wonderful things that people bring in and then say to yourself, you know, I did never see a dot, dot, dot. And then there's what you go home and start thinking about. I wonder if I could get a booth next year.
Exactly.
So we had earlier on the show today, some folks who are over at the we're selling at the back corner of the Jack. So there's opportunities to look for things in both of those venues. I haven't heard anything specifically from anyone over in the Native Crafts Market or the Native Artists Market, but always some wonderful opportunities over there as well. And I don't know if I don't believe they charge an admission there. I think the only ticket that you have to pay for is the one for the main event, which is the one that you're in the middle of.
I think that's correct, yes.
Have you had a chance to walk around to some of the other areas, or have you been tied down to the booth since you got over there?
I did a little bit of a walkthrough earlier, and I actually am kind of mobile right now, but I have been tied for the last hour to the booth.
Well, as you walk around, can you kind of describe some of the interesting things that you see?
Sure. We've got some extra tough stockings here, and those look great. We have Mr. Kelly here with his posters and his calendars. We have some Ulu knives. We have some nice knitting going on. We have some Alaska Native tribal art. I mean, there's just so much to see here.
And then can you get far enough away from the booth? Is there someone who can kind of watch it? Can you go out into the lobby and tell us what's out there?
Sure. I actually just headed into the ballroom. Let me
In the lobby.
That was only a little brief walkthrough of the ballroom here.
Oh, okay.
So give me a second
to
head back.
Mm-hmm.
From what I can see now, I see a lot of Christmas ornaments. We've got some smoked salmon going on out here. We have some shirts. Yeah, there's just so much to see. It's overwhelming.
Yeah, it can be overwhelming. And the nice thing about getting overwhelmed is over in the back corner by the double doors usually is a fairly significant sized food court. So if you get overwhelmed and need a break, you can wander over there usually and find something really good to eat.
Exactly.
Yeah. Do you want to give us do you have time to do us a capsule review of the food?
Sure. Let me head that way.
Okay. Good enough. Hey, Andrea, thank you so much for taking a little time off the booth to sort of give us a guided tour.
Sure. I'm not quite there yet, but I can definitely smell some delicious food.
Okay, so who all's out?
All right, it looks like we have Chilcat Combs here.
Uh-huh.
It looks like Song Sushi Bars here. We have Panhandle Provisions here. Suwana Cafe. We've got a couple of vendors who I haven't seen before.
Oh.
We have some smoked salmon quesadillas being sold. El Sombrero's here. Not much to do about it from what I can see.
Yeah, but a great opportunity to go over and have a little snack and like that. Andrea, thank you very, very much for giving us the guided tour.
You bet.
Really appreciate your taking a few moments off the booth. And, folks, the public market lasts tonight until 7 o'clock, and then it opens up again, I believe, at 10 o'clock in the morning, right? On Saturday?
I believe so,
10 o'clock Sunday. Okay, so this is your opportunity. This is your chance to see a whole bunch of different possibilities for the perfect Christmas present. So take it in. It's going on right now over at the Jack. The main Centennial Hall Ballroom and all of the other rooms, and also over at the Elizabeth Paratovich Center. So this is the weekend to do the Christmas shopping. Thank you very much, Andrea.
You're welcome. Yeah. We'll talk to you, Pat.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right,
bye-bye. Hi, my name is Phil Paramore. I host Soundings on Monday mornings at 10 a.m. on KRNN. I appreciate KRNN radio because it's fun, it's fresh, it's entertaining, and it's informative. Tune in to KRNN 102.7 FM. Thanks.
I'm Bill Legere, manager of KTOO. The success of this station depends directly on membership support from listeners like you. You can become a member today for as little as $5 a month. Find out more at ktoo.org.
Pat Moore, been your host for the last hour or so here of today's Juno Afternoon Show. Had a number of wonderful opportunities, guests in the last little bit there that we did with Andrea. Tells you that the public market is on right next door to us, so you might want to go take it in. On Monday, Scott Burton will be in here to do Juno Afternoon. He's going to be talking with M.K. McNaughton, Karen Beeson, and Colin Goldrich. They'll all be in from Annie Kales to talk about the gallery walk. We're having First Friday next weekend, so these folks will be talking a lot through the week about First Friday opportunities. Orca Ski and Snowboard program will be on. James Hoagland is coming down to talk about World AIDS Day, and the Folk Festival on First Friday will be part of Scott's program. So tune in for that. Right now, you're in tune with KTOO in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also broadcast on a set of translators in the Valley and Auk Bay. It's K276 AF at 103.1 MHz. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, you better signal on 101.7 K269 AO. Gustavus listens on K201 AM at 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. And Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, it's K210 AS. They're on 89.9 MHz. In Juneau, you can get KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. We can be heard on digital channel 872 KRNN. Our sister station in KXLL is on 873. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Time now for All Things Considered.